This is episode 8 of Atypical Presentation. Power. Hey guys, my name is Hannah. I'm your host of the podcast Atypical Presentation, a medical podcast where I dive into some of the nuances and atypical things in the world of medicine, healthcare, and science that aren't really talked about on a day-to-day basis in the lives of medical students, PA students, medical professionals, and patients and lay people alike. Today on episode 8, I'm going to be diving into a topic that encompasses every interaction in medicine on every different front that I've been interested in since day one, and that is power. I first started thinking about the role of power in medicine when I was probably 8 years old and first knew that I wanted to be a doctor and go to Harvard Medical School. And since then, a lot of things have changed. When I started to think more about what I can do with power and how to use it appropriately and in a way that puts empathy at the center of all my interactions. I in no way am trying to say that one type of professional over another shows more empathy, but there is a theme in what kind of jobs in healthcare have more patient interaction time and which positions focus more on decision-making and diagnostic thinking versus physical tasks that need to be accomplished and completed day in and day out. And that's kind of what drew me into the role of a physician assistant, coupled with my idea of a typical lifestyle that I'd like to put into action once I graduate. I touched a little bit about power in episode 7 when I was talking about the husband stitch and just power given to the female in the birthing suite. And a blog that really put me onto this idea about talking more about power was the Feminist Midwife blog. I mentioned it last week, but I once again want to just underline how influential and how awesome the Feminist Midwife blog is, and I really recommend you guys checking it out. What she talked about was this power, this idea of ours versus theirs, our power versus their power. And when I'm talking about our, what I mean is the viewpoint in medicine that professionals and students and anyone who really dons a white coat or puts a stethoscope around their neck has when they walk into a room versus their power, the power of the patient. And I don't want to say that we're permanently in one of these positions because as a PA student myself, I also don the role of a patient when I go to my own doctor's appointments. So enrolling in medical school, PA school, nursing school, you already sign up for this knowledge to place yourself in a different realm, a different way in which we present our bodies, a different way to hold ourselves, a different way to shape our predilections and our choices and our wants. You see these changes in small ways. Maybe it's in the way you groom yourself or what you start eating once you read up more on diets that are affecting your body. And once you understand the pathophysiology of different mechanisms, maybe you'll stop smoking or you'll cut down on drinking or maybe you'll go vegan. Shout out to my vegan healthcare people and vegans alike. But you start to make changes. And then when professionals dress the part, put on the white coat, put on the scrubs, we're making our knowledge known. So my question to all of you guys is, are we choosing our power? Do we choose to own it in a way that shows empathy, or are we choosing to display it in a way that makes us want to take our white coat to the laundromat and show it off? And by this, I have a little anecdote. I'm living in Brooklyn. I do my laundry across the street, and occasionally I need to wash my grimy white coat because it's really disgusting after a while. And I always feel kind of weird washing it because I'm afraid someone's going to see me and then they're going to like make these snap judgments about me or if I have this superiority or like power complex, and I don't like that. And for one thing, it's a short jacket. It's a student's jacket and it's a dirty, unkempt jacket, but it's a white coat and it has my name on it and it just shows power. And sometimes I like to shrink away from that. But my question is, are you owning it? Are you showing it off to the world when you're in public in a way that displays your authority? Or are you owning it and using it the way it should be used? And I'm not saying that using it the way it should be used means you should be shrinking away from your power either. And that's something that I need to work on personally. So there's definitely a delicate balance in between these two polar opposites, but it's something that needs to be talked about, and it's something that involves power. I think the craziest thing to me is that the patient, their power, theirs, is about handing over power, relinquishing power, and relinquishing control and putting trust in another person. And that takes a great deal of power and a great deal of choice. And if that choice is respected, then there's a really good power shift, a good dynamic that is just a perfect kind of like hand-holding situation where you're trusting me to take care of you. You're choosing to do that. And there should be still a back and forth regardless of that relinquishing. The power is still always shifting. It's never this stagnant thing. Power is always moving, and I think we need to be aware of that. Once someone chooses to put their trust in us, it's still a back and forth, and it's still something that we need to understand is mobile. Do we deserve this position if we're going to immediately take that power and not give it back and use it in a way that really forces people to make decisions or scares people into making decisions that we think are right? I need to share this quote with you guys because I think it fits perfectly into what we're talking about today, but it's by Susan Miksic, and she says, "I'm trying to imagine ethics without an awareness of power. That would be like trying not to step on anyone's toes without an awareness of one's feet." So let's look at power as a relational, co-constructed process with the potential to exert influence. I think that's the biggest thing with medicine. Where my current preceptor actually always talks about this, but people are paying us for advice. And that advice holds a great deal of weight. So inherently, as people, we have personal power, our ability to have an effect and to have an influence. And we can hold that by the way we talk, just the general knowledge that we hold, the way we dress a certain day, just our personality. And then we have role power. This is an added-on power, kind of like a superpower that you work to get. It comes with responsibilities and opportunities, and it accompanies a positional role. I read this really great example of how we can look at this role power versus personal power, and it comes in the idea of a scarf. So there's this therapist who is talking about donning a scarf when she goes into her office and talks to her clients. So walking around in her everyday clothes, she has her personal power. Those clothes are her personal power. She just inherently has it. She can give someone advice out on the street, and it has nothing to do with her job. It just is who she is as a person. She's a caring person with empathy. She's good at listening, and she's good at giving advice. As soon as she walks into her office as a therapist, she puts on her scarf, and she automatically has up power. I like to think of it as up power and down power, another really cool thing that I was reading up on. When she steps into that building, she has up power towards her clients. She has this scarf that adds on more responsibilities and more opportunities that she can give to her clients that already are superseding that personal power that she has as a person with her own God-given gifts and talents. But then there's also down power, and a person that has up power in a certain situation can walk into a supermarket and go up to the deli clerk and automatically have down power to that delicatessen connoisseur person. I have no idea what I would call them. But I'm saying this to emphasize that when I'm a physician assistant student and I'm talking to a patient, I have up power towards them. But then as soon as my preceptor walks in, I have down power towards him. Power play is so fluid. Things can change in an instant. So why are we going to abuse our up power? Not just to say that maybe one day we're going to be in a position of down power to that person that we were abusing while we had up power, but why treat power as something that can be held over another's head when we can use it as a way of showing love and care and empathy. Cedar Barstow wrote a great article on goodtherapy.org. Another great recommendation. The article was titled "The Power Differential and Why It Matters So Much in Therapy." What Barstow was trying to say was that there are 6 categories of values that patients and clients look to in their therapists or their medical professionals when they're stepping into the office. 1, safety, kindness, and boundaries. 2, a larger frame. 3, expertise. 4, assigned responsibilities. 5, accountability. 6, assessment and productivity. So these are things that all involve power, all involve making big decisions and knowing how to use your role and how to assign different therapy ideas and ways to conduct your relationship with each other. But they're all ways that are not abusing power. So diving more into these specific categories, we have confidence in the caregiver's knowledge, training, and expertise. I mean, when I go to the doctor, I don't want to have a practitioner who is necessarily being very high and mighty towards me, but I don't want someone who's unsure about what they're talking about, because then how can I give up the power from my body to that person? I want someone who is sensitive, respectful, fair, and caring. Someone who has allocated responsibilities and is going to carry out those responsibilities with direction, focus, guidance, support. I want a chain of accountability. I don't want someone standing there alone with power who has no one else to support them and to hold them to those standards. But all in all, as the patient, as the clientele, I want the final decision-making authority, because that's when power really becomes something that is personal. I'm relinquishing my power to have you look at my body, to have you assess me, to have you tell me what you think I should do. And that's already giving up a little bit of my dignity, a little bit of my own confidence in my own decision-making. But at the end of the day, I don't want to be persuaded to do something that I don't feel comfortable doing. And I think that's something that can easily take over. And I've seen it happen as a student. And as a student, I don't have as much power. I'm in a position of down power. So it's something that we really need to work to regulate ourselves and see that we're giving the patient the final decision. And I mentioned this on the last episode, but this just goes into the whole idea of asking a patient what they want to talk about when they step into the office, allowing the patient to speak when they're in the office rather than us leading the conversation. Sitting at a position that just evokes equality rather than superiority. And we need to be aware of these things, and we need to be constantly fighting for these things, because it's so inherently easy when you're wearing a white coat, when you're wearing a stethoscope, and when people look to you as their own almost like medical god, it's so easy to just take advantage of that. We've all been on both sides of it, but being so young, just beginning to understand these things, especially from a medical perspective, I remember the days when I wouldn't remember which side of my abdomen the appendix was on, or if someone would have told me that my lungs were resonant to percussion, I would have been confused as hell. So I think it's easy for me to assess this power struggle more easily than maybe future me would be able to. And I hope that future me will still be aware of these things. But I remember having the instinct as a patient, the instinct to quickly slice a person, their intentions, their values, if they really cared about me, and why they were actually interested in having me as a patient. The timing is pretty impeccable for this episode, because my lovely roommate actually lent me a book called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. Probably a lot of you guys have heard about this book. It's a hugely popular best-selling book. And it's all about decision making and judgment calls and split seconds. It's how our brains are so innately powerful, because it's almost like we're able to mind read people and mind read what people are actually feeling when we can pick up on a quick facial expression or even just a tone of voice. And even though it doesn't match what a person's saying, we can make this judgment call that seems so much more important than anything coming out of their mouth. And that's all in the same with choosing a provider when power is involved. And I think it's all the more important to do this in a medical setting because when a patient is seeking medical advice, they're seeking someone to help their bodies. They're seeking professional advice on the most important thing in their life. And in the end, it's the patient who's making that decision on who they're choosing. And in the end, as I said, it should be the patient who's making the decision on what is happening. It's the patient taking their instinct to heart. I had to do this recently when I was searching for a therapist. And I think finding a therapist is almost 200 times more difficult than finding a medical doctor because your words are so much more delicate than my body in my own personal experience. And maybe that's because I'm young and not many things are going wrong at this point physically, but it's just so much more intimate to find someone that I'm willing to spill my life to. But it was also that much easier to know if an encounter didn't feel right and if I didn't think I could trust someone to take care of that very precious and vulnerable part of myself. Malcolm Gladwell talks about actually how patients were able to make this quick snap decision with surgeons and how it could be told just which surgeons are more likely to be sued for malpractice than another just based upon the tone of their voice. So he took a bunch of surgeons, some that were sued for malpractice and some that were not, and it had nothing to do with the amount of medical mistakes they were making. Whether that be omissions or commissions, but people could make the decision on which surgeons were the unsuable surgeons because they had better inflections in their conversations. And they didn't even hear the words. They blurred out all of the words. They couldn't see any facial expressions. But just by listening to the tone, you can pick up when someone really doesn't care and when someone maybe isn't interested in your body and they're more interested on their paycheck or on just the daily flow of their life, or maybe they're not even thinking about you and they're just kind of going through a mindless routine. So it seems like as medical professionals, we have this idea that we have power and that sometimes we don't just demand respect from patients, but we demand subservience. And respect does not equal subservience on any front. Where does this power come from? Where does this idea about our presentation and our taste and our judgments and the superiority of those judgments come from? I was reading up on Pierre Bourdieu, who did a great job of just exhibiting where power is coming from and how it has a lot to do with class structure and habitus. He's a French sociologist, anthropologist, and philosopher of aesthetics, known for his work on distinctions. And he actually has a book, Distinctions, A Social Critique of the Judgments of Taste, and how judgments are based on social classes. And once again, this is a huge thing because medical professionals are put almost into an entirely different social class, a class that has different tastes in food and culture and in presentation, which is really what I'm trying to underline in this episode, just how presentation differs so much when you don that white coat and how that just innately changes the way you talk to people, the way that you make decisions, the way that you hold yourself. Walking around a room thinking you have up power can make you feel taller and more worthy and less anxious versus when you walk around a room feeling and being told that you have down power and you want to shrink away. Your presentation is changed and your tastes are changed and ultimately your whole mindset is based on an entirely different concept. Bourdieu believed that habitus provides the basic framework of a cultural taste and orientations to the body. And the upper class, let's say medical professionals in our case, have a taste for freedom. A taste for power, I'd like to say, because I believe freedom innately leads to power. For example, the ability to act upon one's preferences is in itself a power. When you are a medical professional, when you have that power and you have the freedom and the preference of action, the ability to exert your preferences on another, it doesn't take into consideration that person's habitus, that person's social class, and how their judgments will be different just because of that in itself. A study was done by Laura Nimmin and Therese Stenfors-Hayes titled The Handling of Power in the Physician-Patient Encounter, Perceptions from Actual Experienced Physicians. They listed that there are a few different ways that physicians and medical professionals can be seen in their relationships with patients. And these were actually developed by Ezekiel and Linda Manuel. And they've been highly, widely used to categorize physicians. And the roles include the guardian, the technical expert, the counselor, and the friend. Now, as we're all very different people, we all want very different things in our medical professional that we so choose. And these things may change depending on the actual type of physician that we need for certain encounters, as we may choose a therapist who's more like a counselor or a friend versus an oncologist who is more of a technical expert. But it's important to understand that power changes. Certain types of power are more useful in certain situations than others. And by and all, we must be aware that people are viewing our power in many different ways. And some people, even if we think we may be perfect owners of our own power, of our up power, there are still different ways that we could be using it. And there are different people who hold different types of preferences based on their background and their habitus. And that might require us to kind of shift into a different role to inhabit that power. So in this study, they talk about the need for a medical education training that integrates the insights from physicians who are aware of their power and use it strategically to better prepare novice and practicing physicians to enact a patient-centered therapeutic communication. They say that they suggest medical educational initiatives that allow physicians to be reflective and analytical and creative in their handling of power should be initiated. Medical professionals should both be aware of their capacity, of their power, and be able to communicate strategies to handle that power better, and be more open to conversations about power in general. Back on a reflective end of things, let's talk about our side, our power, and what we can do to better navigate that. And I'd like to open this discussion. Please email me, as I always say, you guys. My email is thephysicianassistant@gmail.com. If you have any input on this subject, I'd be highly interested to talk about it and just to bounce back ideas, because I think this is something that's constantly evolving. And like I said, it's a very fluid concept. But just my own brainstorming, I think it's really important to be, number one, open to referrals, open to being wrong, and open to a patient deciding to choose someone else for a certain task and being supportive of that decision. I think it's also extremely important that after a physical exam is over, where a patient is wearing a gown, to allow them to redress and to enter back into their casual clothes before you talk and before you come up with a treatment plan and discuss options, because it just inherently puts someone at a place of vulnerability and maybe discomfort while we're dressed in a white coat, professional clothing, and they're half naked. I think it's really important that we are constantly learning and constantly increasing our medical knowledge and having a good possession of that knowledge, because once again, power is important, and it's important to share power, but it's also important to own power and to be confident in our power. I think all conversations with patients should be done at eye level if possible. A lot of the times patients are sitting down while physicians are standing up and looking down on them, or we're sitting on a higher stool and they're laying down on an exam table. And I think it's just another very easy thing that can be changed just to create a bit more comfort in our encounters. And lastly, I think this is huge, especially in our modern generation that is so keen to look up things on Medline and be Googling different medical conditions, but I think it's important to encourage patients to be researching about their own conditions or researching about their bodies, because we all deserve to know our bodies rather than to have someone just tell us about them all the time. And I think a lot of the times it's easy to be overwhelmed and to be scared when someone comes in with a lot of questions that actually make us think as professionals. This is a very simple one, but a great way to show empathy while we have power is to listen. Patients are actually usually interrupted within the first 23 seconds of an interview and within 23 seconds of them answering any questions or bringing things up. So I think it's very important to just allow them the space to speak, because you can often learn a lot more when you allow that time, and it also just shows respect. So those are just a few things that I have in mind. Please email me if you guys have any more ideas or if you just want to keep the conversation going, because I think this is a super important topic to just keep talking about. But yeah, that brings us to the close of this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure to follow me on SoundCloud. And like I said before, keep up with me, because soon I will be releasing the website and that'll be up pretty soon. But yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.